You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome to the Gastroenteritis Blues. My name is Steve Lippman. I'm joined, as always, with Emily Cannell and Dan Volpone. This is, we're really doing it. First question is to Emily. Emily, how are you doing? How's your day going?
It's good. That was weird to hear you say Emily Cannell.
Right?
But I agree.
I'm not used to it yet. I'm getting there. And when I say it in my head, I made my maiden name my middle name, so I say like Emily Anderson Cannell in my head, and so it doesn't sound as weird because I still have the Emily Anderson together.
Right.
But when you just say first and last, it's like weird. But I'll get used to it. I have a lifetime of being a Cannell, so I'll get used to it.
Let me ask you, logistically, Did you not have a middle name before that, or did you replace the middle name, or did you add it to the existing middle name?
I replaced the middle name. I had a middle name and I replaced it. My mom was not pleased. Well, she's fine with it, but me and my mom had the same middle name. So it was like a thing, and now we don't.
Now we just need to get her to change her middle name to Anderson so that you once again sync up.
She can be Susan Anderson Anderson. It'd be
now
great.
We're talking. Double the trouble.
That's perfect.
That's good. Danny, how are you, pal?
Oh, I'm good. I've been tired lately, but not for any reason.
No? Are you staying up late watching cartoons?
No, never. No? I can't even stay up late because I'm tired.
You used to yell at me when the Sixers could trade for James Harden. You would yell at me for how early I was going to bed, and now you're going to bed.
Yeah, because it'd be like 10 o'clock, and, you know, basketball rehab's got
we have to get to
stuff that I'm going to believe.
Dan, I will not go into this with you. I would really be out of commission pretty early there. And I will say, next weekend, I'm going to a bachelor party, and it's going to be a nightmare. And I am coming back on Sunday. We have a special guest that Sunday. It's going to be a real 30% of Steve Lippman podcast. So I'm going to need you guys to carry me.
Speaking of carrying me, I like when you're drunk on podcasts. Those are my favorite.
You know, every once
we're
in a
on
while,
the Twitter.
What's that?
Or on the Twitter.
Oh, that's always fun. That's really fun. I do these polls that people just despise. I really have a fun time doing the polls on Twitter. All right. Sixers played the Clippers on Friday night.
Right.
And they won. There were a number of people out, of course. Pat Beverly was out. Serge Ibaka and Kawhi Leonard were out. The Sixers were missing Seth Curry, Tobias Harris, and Dwight Howard. And it was, so I thought that sort of was a wash in terms of like one team wasn't way outweighing the other in terms of important players playing. But I thought it was a really nice win for the Sixers. They got out to a giant lead in the first quarter that, of course, wasn't going to stick around for long. Korkmaz got the start. And have we even talked about him once on this podcast? Have we?
Well, you asked me who was the best player in the Celtics game besides Joel. I said Furkan.
Oh, that's true.
No, I said Danny Green. That was the Danny Green game. That wasn't the Furkan game. I take it back. Uh-oh.
Okay. but Korkmaz has been great. And, we can talk a little bit more about him. But overall, the Sixers pull out this win. Joel had 35 again, which was, I think, his fourth or fifth time in a row with 35 points or more. What did you take away from the Clippers game? And what did you think of it, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, they blew a lead again, but I don't really care because, I mean, it's two straight wins over good teams. People were out again. It was kind of annoying. I mean, that would have been such a fun stretch if both teams had everyone healthy for both those games. But that's just kind of the story of this year. It's not the Sixers' fault that, you know, other teams have guys out. So a win's a win. The Sixers are right now a game up on Brooklyn and have the tiebreaker. So, you know, I'll take it.
Yeah. And they, I believe last night, I think Milwaukee lost on Saturday night. So now they're four games up on Milwaukee, who are in third. Emily, the Clippers game, what'd you think?
Yeah, same with Dan. I'm not like worried about them blowing the lead at the end because they won the game still. And that's something that they wouldn't have. Last year they would have blown the lead and they would have lost the game. Mm-hmm. They would not have kept fighting. It would have just been like a throw it to the wind. And then we would have been pissed online afterwards.
Or they would have been down exactly 8 the entire game.
Yeah, that's another one. That's fun.
That was the worst. Yeah.
I mean, I preferred when they were up 20-3. That was the most fun that I was having during that game. But, yeah, I'll take the win. And like I said, I'm never picking the Sixers to lose again. I'm done.
Yeah.
Sixers wins from here on out.
That was great. One thing I love, every single time it happens, usually Joel does it, but it's when a Sixer, something will happen, like a momentum sort of play, and a Sixer will put their arms up to the crowd and tell them to cheer more. That I think is the coolest thing in the fucking world. And Ben Simmons did it. Now, Ben is not normally somebody to do that, but Ben had a pretty incredible, like, athletic block as he blocked Patrick Patterson's three. And he, like, went into the crowd and put his arms up and, like, appealed to – I just eat that shit up. I love it. I thought that was so cool. The other things that happened, Korkmaz was great. Now, Korkmaz has been really great lately, and – for me, when I was like projecting the Sixers like 9-man rotation in the playoffs, he was probably going to be out of it. You know, I figured he might get like 10 minutes here or there, but he's played really well. He doesn't seem like a liability on defense as much anymore. Yeah.
He's been like, really good.
And like,
he's been really good.
Yeah.
He's gotten a lot of steals.
So if we think that Sixers are going to make the playoffs, which we do, how do we think the rotation? How is the rotation going to pan out now? Like there, because now there are 10 guys who you could definitely see playing, but 10 guys aren't going to play like heavy minutes. So the five off the bench would basically be George Hill, apparently still a Sixer and might play this week, and we might all be Canels by the end of the week. I hope so too. Hopefully, Jordy will welcome us with open arms to his family. We have George Hill, Shake Milton, Furkan Korkmaz, Matisse Thybulle, Dwight Howard. Let's say
Mike Scott,
of course.
Stop it.
let's say that like three of those guys are going to play heavy bench minutes. Who would you think that would be? And then who are the two that sort of come in for, you know, gadget minutes at the end of quarters and stuff like that? Emily, what do you think?
That's hard. Because I would, on like skill wise, I would kind of want to say Dwight as like the gadget minutes, but we don't have another like backup center. And I mean, Joel will be playing most of those minutes, but because like Matisse and Dwight, Matisse is just so valuable on defense. I think it depends what we need that game. Do we need defense? Do we need someone who's going to shoot threes? And maybe that flip-flops between like Matisse and Furkan, who's like picking those minutes up. But I think like Shake and George Hill are like the two that are going to be get the bulk of the minutes, and then it kind of floats between the other ones.
Yeah, the way I'm thinking about it is that part of it is going to depend on how Shake and Hill play together. I think Hill is a lock. Hill's definitely going to play, and I think he's probably going to close some games. I don't know. You know, Shake has sort of been up and down a little bit lately, but he's had some big moments. He had a huge three against LA. We'll see. You know, Dwight is only going to play when Joel sits, which is probably like at most 15 minutes, you know, if the Sixers have a big lead or you know, whatever. My instinct is maybe it's Shake and Dwight. I don't know. Dan, what do you think?
I mean, so you're saying the three who are like going to be regulars, I think it would be George Hill, Matisse Thybulle, and Dwight. And I think that you might see Shake not getting as many minutes as we've seen him get when Hill comes in. Just Hill can, they're fairly similar, and I think Hill's going to be, you know, can play on the ball, but is probably going to be stronger off the ball at this point in his career. And, you know, I haven't, you know, gotten to see much of Hill this year. He didn't play much. He was on a horrible team and he's been hurt. But, you know, Shake has been a little iffy lately. And I think Doc is going to go with the vet, the guy they just, you know, got to play these minutes. I still think Shake gets some time. I like Shake a lot. And then, you know, Furkan's been great. I think he'll probably get on the court at some points in the playoffs in meaningful minutes. But I'm not, you know, I wouldn't make the prediction that he would be like a full, you know, every game playing at like 15 minutes a game part of the rotation.
And a home games. Furkan will get in more in home games. He's much better at home.
He's great at home. You know, the good part about it is that it does seem like the Sixers have options in terms of their bench players. And, you know, Thibault is such a unique player. I feel like he's played offense a lot better since his, like, he had an awful start to the year where he was basically not participating. But I think lately, especially since the All-Star break, he's shot the ball fine. And, you know, he's sort of had some straight line drives that, have been helpful. So, yeah, I don't think he's really a liability out there. I think he's just like an extremely low usage guy who isn't going to be counted on very much. Joel, you know, we've obviously talked about him a lot, but he dominated again. He just looks unguardable. And, you know, Doc is putting him around the foul line when teams are doubling a lot, which is great because he can see the whole floor and be more of a sort of triple threat from there. You know, we're going to talk a little bit more about Joel in the low post, but the other thing from the Clippers game is that Anthony Tolliver came out there. Tobias sat during this game. Doc said before, if Tobias is playing, I don't know how the hell I can get Anthony Tolliver on the court. Well, Tobias was off, so Anthony Tolliver came in. He blocked Paul George at the rim, and he hit the backboard on a few three-point attempts. I enjoyed it. Emily, do you think we could get Anthony Tolliver on the podcast if he gets another 10-day?
Yeah, let's try.
Hey, let's get him on.
Yeah.
Worth a shot.
Worth a shot.
To connect to the fans, I say we do it.
Definitely. We got Paul Reed. He's on a three-year contract. We can get Anthony Collins. Come on. Yeah, Dan, did you have anything on the sort of a backup big rotation there from the Clippers game?
You mean in terms of with the whiteout?
Yeah. Yeah, and how they're basically deciding to guard teams without Dwight.
I mean, I'm just so frustrated that no Tobias meant Mike Scott starting, first of all. And, like, then no Dwight probably meant even more Mike Scott minutes. Like, I agree with – you made this point earlier, but, like, I don't think Doc, like, thinks that Mike Scott has been as bad as everyone else thinks he's been.
He can't.
It's really hard to watch often. Like, he's just – like there was I remember there was one play where he like he was fine. I think there was a pass coming in from up top, the guy cutting back door like behind a screen, and Mike Scott was like trying to get over the top, but the guy went back door and Mike Scott was so far away from getting to the ball. And it was a wide open layup. And I think it might have been a foul on Joel because of that on that play as well. And it's just like he can't be in. Like he doesn't defend, he doesn't give you anything on offense. He's not a great rebounder. Like, it's frustrating. But that's my main takeaway with Dwight out, and especially Tobias out, I guess, is that we ended up seeing a lot of Mike Scott. But we did get to see Paul Reed, so that was fun.
Man, Paul got in there for a few minutes. Just a few minutes in the first either quarter or half. And I just love seeing him out there. We'll see. I'll be very interested to see when the Sixers have all of their players, like George Hill is back and then everybody else is healthy. Does Mike Scott survive those – that, you know, like the advent of the entire team? I don't know. He can't.
You would think so, but he seems to be a big part of the rotation at this point.
Yeah, like we have him out of the playoff rotation and Doc is like, I'm gonna start this guy.
Yeah.
Doc's doing the math in his head and he's like, all right, well, it's Scott and then George Hill, and like Scott is one of his cemented players in there. We'll see. Sixers were all over the media this week as awesome. Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons are campaigning for their awards. Utah Jazz fans are not happy. Rachel Nichols, friend of the podcast.
Come on the pod.
Meet her on the pod because she's fighting the good fight. Joel went on the low post with Zach Lowe. Simmons talked to actual friend of the pod, Tyler Tynes, who's now with GQ. You know, Joel, of course, was talking about, you know, his evolution this year and how he thinks he should be the MVP and, you know, his commitment to the defensive end. He said, I should be the defensive player of the year. And then Zach was like, what about Ben? And Joel was like, no, I mean, Ben should be the defensive player of the year. And Joel even backed that up after the game. He said, Ben should be the defensive player of the year, which I love. Simmons had a, you know, Tyler's so funny. The questions that Tyler was asking Ben are really great. And he was sort of going back at him with, you know, Kyrie scoring 37. And so what did you guys take away from those two interviews? And, you know, where do you think their chances stand today on those awards? Emily?
Well, you know where I stand with Joel and MVP. I am firmly Rachel Nichols' vice lieutenant on that one. Mm-hmm. The interviews were just so fun. Joel is always so endearing and fun to listen to talk, even just like, just the way he talks, the way he's like very open. Like Zach even asked him about like the piece in part of the Of Your Own's book where he, yeah, what they called him difficult, and like basically Joel is going to get us all fired, and Joel didn't really like shy away from the question. He was like, yeah, they were asking me to do things I didn't want to do, and I was right because I needed another surgery. So right. Like I loved his story about being like a cartoon with the flames coming out of his head when he found out he didn't make an all NBA team while his girlfriend was giving birth to his son. He was just great. I give him the MVP. It's all I want, yeah, in life.
Yeah.
He also the other thing from that interview was Joel talking about being a father and talking about, like, you know, just spending quality time with his son and having real conversations eventually and all of this kind of stuff, which is incredibly endearing. Dan, from those two interviews, big takeaways, what do you got?
My big one from the Joel one was when he talked about, like, the difference between this year and last year and how last year he would come in and, like, you know, they're having, say, it's like a workout or something. He's like, I hope this goes fast. I hope I can be done soon, because he was really just not enjoying himself. It's kind of obvious watching him, yeah, play that he was not having as much fun as he used to. But, you know, he's talked about how that's different this year. I'm really happy that it is. And it's clearly, you know, shown in his play. And he was saying, you know, I've always loved basketball. This was like weird that I was not having fun. You know, usually right, that's the norm, that I'm just having fun. The Ben interview was really good. I thought Tyler did a good job. One thing that I thought was really funny, this is kind of dumb, but this is a takeaway I have. You know, he was asking Ben about like criticism he gets, and one of the things was like the Wizards announcer saying he's the most overrated player in the NBA. And Ben starts talking about like knowing the game. He said, the thing with people is that they think they know something so well. And this guy, thinks he knows basketball so well. And that may be because he watches the games, but does he really know the game? Did he grow up playing the game? Has he been in different situations? Has he run the point guard position? Has he played at this level? Like, everybody wants to feel like they know the game, and that's just not the case. Draymond Green says it all the time. That's not the case. Not everybody knows everything about something or as much as they think they know. So I think that's a fair point Ben's making, right? Like, obviously, Ben knows a million times more about basketball than I do, if not more than that. I don't know how you can quantify that, but infinitely more than I do, more than any of us do, more than anyone we know does, because Ben is an NBA player who has NBA coaches and has played his whole life and plays with the best players in the world. Then later in the interview, he's talking about his defensive player of the year case. And you know, Tyler shoots back, didn't Kyrie have 37 last night though? And Ben says, yeah, but we won. His plus minus was -2. So he becomes immediately a box score watcher when he's making his case, instead of like everything he's just talking about, how he knows the game, which I think is really funny. And it's definitely something that we would do, which I found kind of fun.
I have to say, we mentioned on Locker Room that Ben is like our dads. And that is another example,
yes,
of like, there's only one ball, you got to play D. And also 37 empty points. We won the game. You know, like, I just love it. I think that that's great. I don't think that you need to have played in the NBA to know about basketball. Not that we do, but just other people,
right, yeah,
who haven't played in the league. You know, so they, you know, Ben has his case about being defense player of the year. I feel like Ben has real momentum here. I think that, you know, this stretch, which is looking a little bit different now because of the Sixers have won 3 games, but they've been, except for Dallas, the other teams have been fairly shorthanded, and even Dallas is without Porzingis. We'll see. I think Simmons has like a legit, probably as good a shot as, I'm sure the odds don't say that, but probably as good a shot as Gobert does to win Defensive Player of the Year. Joel, I just would love it. You know, I really don't think he can miss another game this year. And they have a back-to-back coming up this week that I don't know if they're going to play and win, but it's probably 2 difficult games that would both be heavy minutes. You know, it seems like there are people on different sides of it, but, you know, Tim Bontemps did this poll of like potential voters, and it was very much in Jokic's favor. So I don't know. I think it would take a lot from Joel down the stretch, just, you know, continuing these performances, which he's certainly capable of. But even then, it might just be like, people might just have him disqualified. And I don't agree with that. Like, I feel like, who did you think had the better season? And if the answer is Embiid, but Embiid missed more games, then the MVP is you.
He almost won as many games as Jokic in the games he's played.
Right. I don't think that that's Jokic's only case. I think he's been incredible, and I think there's a very merit-based case to give him. But right. When it's like Joel loses on a technicality, it reminds me of when they were trying to take the Rookie of the Year away from Ben because he was injured the prior year. Like, I just feel like, you know, make the case for Jokic, but don't make it about the games Joel missed because, you know, this is a strange year where there's a lot going on, and Joel will have played 75% of the games, and I think that's a large enough sample size. Emily, what do you think? Have things changed lately with their performances in terms of these awards?
I don't know that things have changed in terms of their performances. I just think that these awards are so, like, sorry if you can hear that siren.
Emily's being
arrested. They're so, like, yeah, they're at my
house. It'd be so funny to see on the, like, on the Zoom. It'd be kind of funny if someone, yeah, it'd be so surprising.
That would be surprising. But in terms of MVP, because they're so narrative-based, like, honestly, the thing that I think would help, yeah, not missing any games would help Joel's case probably the most, but I think the second thing would be what Rachel Nichols said, like, kind of catching on in the media of the fact that she was, like, kind of, like, fired up about people focusing on, it's like a 50-second clip, it's all over Twitter, about people focusing on the offensive award, and she's saying, I'm not taking anything away from Jokic, but it's a two-way game, and, like, can we look at both sides of the ball for once, because everyone just focuses on these offensive numbers, and, like, Joel's been so dominant on both sides that I think that if that narrative kind of catches on, I think that is helpful and for Joel.
Yeah. We are now being joined by an extremely special guest, Brad Rutters, joining the podcast. Dan, I'll have you take it away here and get us all set up.
Well, first of all, hey, Brad, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Doing good. All right. So we are joined by Brad Rutter. He is a Jeopardy champion. He is host of The Chase on NBC. Or I'm sorry, on ABC. Wait. And Brad... we can change. Steve, you're good with this stuff, right?
Yo, big time.
I'm just kidding. We don't edit these. This is too hard. So, Brad, my first question is, you know, you were in the Jeopardy Greatest of All Time tournament. I think that was in January of 2020, I want to say.
Yes, and seems like 10 years ago, but it was really just over a year.
Yeah, that's pre-COVID, which is crazy. That doesn't even feel that long ago to me. It probably does to you. But to me, that doesn't feel that long ago. But one thing I remember from that tournament is one of your final Jeopardy answers was Eagles Super Bowl 52 champs, and you wagered $4,133 or $41.33, the final score of the Super Bowl. So I have to know, did you come in and you were like, I have to get this in. Everyone's watching this Jeopardy tournament, and I need to get the Eagles Super Bowl in here, or did you just think of it on the fly?
It's sort of a hybrid of both of them. I kind of always had it in the back of my head that I wanted to shout out the Eagles Super Bowl championship some way if I ended up in a situation where the final Jeopardy response wouldn't matter. So I honestly had hoped it had been it would be the other way, where I was so far ahead that I could bet I could lose 41-33 and still win. But you know, at least I got that in.
That's pretty great. You know, you're obviously from the Philadelphia area, and you know, we talk about the Sixers a lot here. How much have you been able to keep up with the Sixers? I believe you're based in LA now. Like, have you been able to keep up with them this year?
Yeah, I have to admit I'm kind of a half-assed Sixers fan, so I kind of just follow the standings, and I don't necessarily watch all the games. But okay. Especially out here in Lakers and Clippers country, you know, the Sixers being at the top of the Eastern Conference, you know, people are talking a lot about who they might match up with in the finals. So that's been exciting.
Oh yeah,
that's great.
What do they say out on the West Coast about the Sixers? We're like stuck in Philly land, so we hear about what we say about them. What are they saying out there?
Well, it's mostly like, well, you know, it'll be the Lakers Clippers in the Western Conference will be the real finals, and then I guess maybe whoever comes out of the East might be okay. But it's like, is it going to be Brooklyn? Is it going to be the Sixers? You know.
Wow, these Hollywood elites. Yeah, right. Wow.
Yeah.
So Dan mentioned earlier that you were part of the greatest of all time tournament. We were just wondering, what was that playing in that tournament like with all these Jeopardy greats?
Well, I had played Ken before, so that was sort of old hat for me. But, you know, watching James over the previous, you know, year and a half, you know, I knew he was really good, too. So I knew it was going to be interesting. Yeah, but it was a lot of fun. And honestly, the best part of it was that, you know, Alex got to host it. You know, I had honestly didn't know whether I was ever going to play Jeopardy with Alex again. And it was fantastic to get that opportunity.
Could you talk a little bit about Alex Trebek? You know, obviously you got to know him personally, and, you know, we've heard such great things about him. He passed away recently, and, you know, he was definitely, for me growing up, we always watched Jeopardy. So he was, you know, a part of my life, but as a person and being actually a part of your life, could you tell us a little bit about him?
Well, they don't make him like him anymore. You know, he's just that old school professional broadcaster. And he really was the guy that came across on TV, you know, very intellectually curious and, you know, held himself to a really high standard. And really funny, too. Like, that's one thing you didn't get to see as much of on TV. But in the commercial breaks, he'd be like doing little dances and doing accents and stuff like that. And he had a really dry sense of humor. So it was always a fun time to be around him. And he used to like to burn my chops a bit when we were taping, which was always fun. You could tell he did it with affection and with a twinkle in his eye. But yeah, he was the best, and you know, we'll never see his like again.
Yeah.
First, Brad, in sports, there are all these sorts of unwritten rules that players sort of abide by, and there are faux pas that sort of amateurs or rookies make. Is there something like that in Jeopardy, where there's a rookie on the scene and they're like, you know, buzzing in too early for a $100 question, and you're like, look at this fucking idiot. Like, is there stuff like that?
Well, buzzing in too early is probably everybody does that at first. You know, that's one of the things that's one of the reasons the returning champion has a big advantage, is because that buzzer timing is so crucial that they've had the experience with it. And the two people who are the challengers are showing up for the first time. And if they don't get it within their first game, they're going to have some trouble. But the thing that always that always makes me tear my hair out is say somebody's, you know, $10,000 behind in Double Jeopardy, and they hit the second daily double with three clues left, and if they bet at all, they can get right back in the game and have a great chance to win. But they're just like, oh, I'll bet $2,000.
Yeah, that annoys me watching. So I feel
that. Yeah, you got to play to win the game, right?
Yeah.
So we know that there's no one that could replace Alex, but we saw Ken recently got the chance to, Ken Jennings got the chance to guest host. Is that something that would ever interest you?
Sure. Yeah. If they know where to find me, if they want me. I thought Ken did a good job. I've been enjoying Aaron Rodgers too, just because that's a unique thing where people can troll him about the Packers like on national television, which is really funny.
Yeah, you mentioned Aaron Rodgers, who's getting the chance or gotten the chance to host the show. Are there any Philadelphia athletes that you'd like to see get a stab at hosting Jeopardy?
You know, I actually, back when Bo Wolf was with the Eagles, he's with the Athletic now, but he used to host a little trivia contest with Evan Mathis, who, and I actually ended up doing one of those a few years ago. And, you know, I thought he came off really well. So he's the first guy who pops to mind.
That's great.
Cool. I also saw you, this was during COVID. You were on the celebrity version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and you were the like in-person lifeline for Catherine O'Hara from Schitt's Creek. And I had to ask you, how did being on Millionaire compare to being on Jeopardy? They're obviously both like trivia-based, but you know, different setups. But you know, is it like different pressure with different strategy? How did you go about that?
There was, I felt a lot more pressure on Millionaire just because A, I wanted to make Catherine look good, and B, you know, it's when I'm on Jeopardy, I'm just playing for myself. You know, if I screw up, there's nobody to blame but me. But, you know, Catherine's playing for charity, and, you know, she's coming to me expecting me to have the answer on Millionaire. And, you know, on Jeopardy, you have 61 clues. So if you know most of them, you're probably going to do okay. But with Millionaire, it's just that one question at a time. And if it happens to be something you never heard of, then, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, sorry, I have no idea. So there was actually a lot more pressure, I think, being Catherine's lifeline than playing Jeopardy myself.
Do you prepare similarly? Because, like, obviously, you know, there's trivia. I guess, you know, there's different focuses. How did you go about that? Did you do something different than what you've already done to prep for Jeopardy?
Not for Millionaire, especially because, you know, the questions are so specific. And, you know, like I said, with Jeopardy, it's going to be a bunch of questions over a wide range of subjects. And, you know, I play a lot of trivia, and that's sort of my thing. So, you know, most of the stuff is pretty fresh in my head. Millionaire, I just tried not to get starstruck by Catherine, who was fantastic, by the way, I should say. She's every bit as charming and wonderful as I expected.
Quickly, I just want to interject before we move to more sports stuff. Do you have an opinion on Cash Cab? Does that feel like the minor leagues to you? Like, what do you think about Cash Cab?
I love Cash Cab. It's a brilliant concept, and I just wish it had gotten, you know, a bigger run on something bigger than basic cable, because it's a fantastic concept. And you know what? I'd love to like drive the cab if they ever bring that back.
That'd be great.
So I actually have another trivia question, not a trivia, Jeopardy question before we get to, I'm not like trying to quiz you. So you say you play a lot of trivia. Is there another, like a way that you prepare for Jeopardy? Cause like you said, Millionaire is hard. My mom was on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and did not prepare. So like, how do you prepare for Jeopardy as compared to like other shows, I guess?
Well, the two biggest things is just being, you know, sort of curious generally. And, you know, I read a lot and watch a lot of documentaries. You know, I'm kind of just naturally inclined that way, which helps. But there's, especially for Jeopardy, there's sort of a canon of stuff that comes up all the time, like presidents, world capitals, Shakespeare. So if I know I'm going to be on Jeopardy, I have a bunch of flashcards I made like 15 years ago that I only occasionally have to update for, you know, new countries and stuff like that for the capitals. But yeah, if you can have all that stuff fresh in your mind, that really helps. And I can't really say that anything I've ever studied has come up that I wouldn't have known otherwise, but it's a big like psychological advantage to know that, okay, here's stuff that comes up all the time and I have it, you know, down. So if it does come up, it'll be there. So it really helps a lot with your confidence going in.
All right. So now we'll get into some Philly sports questions. We just want to know tell us about your Philly sports fandom. Like, who were your favorite athletes growing up? Just any musings on Philly sports.
Well, so I grew up in Lancaster, which is, you know, an hour and a half west of Philly. So my dad was a big Eagles fan and Phillies fan. So I think he probably got me started. So I've been rooting for Philly sports, I guess, ever since I can remember. And I think actually the first sporting event I ever went to, and I'm going to age myself here, was when I was a little kid. We went to see the Sixers play the Bucks. And I think Sidney Moncrief was playing for the Bucks back then. And it was, you know, it's still Moses and Dr. J for the Sixers. So, you know, I'm an old man, but that's my first in-person memory. I ended up being into sports and obviously rooting for the local teams. And I think when I really started to get into it was the Buddy Ryan era with the Eagles. You know, I was maybe like 10, 12 years old, and that was such a fun team to root for as a kid.
Thinking specifically about the Sixers, is there a current or former Sixer that you think would fare especially well as a contestant on Jeopardy?
Iverson for sure. Like, yeah, he's got that that underdog, you know, never give up mentality, you know, the quote unquote 6 foot tall guy, even though he's probably more like 5'10", 5'11", going up against those monsters in the paint and, you know, just putting it all on the line. It's like it's that competitive spirit that separates the decent players from the real greats.
I like that.
Yeah. So do you have any takes? I know you said you're not following the Sixers super close right now, but any takes on the state of Philly sports in general, whether it's the Eagles taking a quarterback in this draft or their new coach or anything?
Well, you know, it's funny, like right after the Super Bowl, it felt like everything was on the upswing, right? You know, the Eagles had just won the Super Bowl, you know, the Phillies weren't doing that well then. So they were sort of at the bottom. But, you know, the Sixers were coming out of the process. The Flyers looked like they had, you know, a good young core of talent. And, you know, hey, the Sixers are making it happen. But like what happened to the other teams? And I guess the Phillies are doing pretty well, too. But just seeing the Eagles and Flyers just collapse this year, it's pretty disheartening. So, you know, I guess we should have known better as Philly fans than to ever have any hope.
Yeah, never get our hopes up. I mean, we should know by now. Yeah. What were you thinking back during the process? I know we were all big, you know, big fans of like trying something new, you know, just, you know, go for it. And everyone was mad about it, but we liked it. We had fun watching them lose. You know, we loved the players rotating in and out. What were your thoughts at the time?
Yeah, well, just coming off making fun of myself for being old, that's one of the things that I'm not an old man about was, yeah, I was on board with it too. You know,
I love it.
it just makes too much sense to which the way the NBA is set up is you need the, you know, those two or three superstars, and the only way to get them is through the draft. So, you know, you basically just have to run non-competitive teams out there until you get enough players to actually be competitive. And the worst place to be is where the Sixers were before that, is being the 7 or 8 seed. And, you know, you'll never get any better and you never have any chance to contend. So it all made a ton of sense to me. But yeah, a part of me, though, I am old enough where I kind of see where the old school guys are coming from, where it's just like, oh, you know, like you're teaching these guys to lose and stuff like that. So I kind of get that a little bit. But I mean, what else are you supposed to do with the way the league is set up?
Yeah, that's a great point. I was wondering, as a champion yourself, the Sixers are first in the East, pursuing a championship, their first championship since 1983. As a former champion and an always champion, do you have advice for the Sixers as to how to like get this ring? What do you think?
I think they already know this kind of, and to an extent that you wouldn't expect for a team that hasn't won it yet. But, especially this year with Doc, they seem really, just taking it one game at a time. You know, mm-hmm. That's the thing is like, don't get too distracted by the larger picture, you know, just focus on what's in front of you. And that's one thing that, has always served me well in Jeopardy is, you just can't pay attention to everything that's going on around you. It's just one clue at a time that comes up. And if you can just push everything else out of your mind and then just focus on the next clue, that's I think that's good advice, you know, for anything, is just focus on what's directly in front of you. It's the only thing you have any control over. And so far, it seems like I think they have that mindset this year.
As a Philly guy, was it killing you when you saw that viral question about Joel Embiid and what his nickname is? And the person said, do a 180. Like, was that killing you to not have been the recipient of that question?
Yeah, although, you know, it's also fun to, you know, Jeopardy contestants usually do pretty well on sports, which is why it's so fun to see when they happen to have a panel of three people who know nothing at all. Like, yeah. I remember that one viral thing about the football category.
Yeah.
Where the contestants just had no idea and Alex was just flabbergasted. Right. That's really entertaining. Although, yeah, it is like, oh, I couldn't have had that one. I couldn't have got the Embiid question.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, so I definitely have to say, like, I agree with your, you know, kind of one game at a time take. And I haven't quite put it into those words, but watching, I want to say specifically Joel this year. And we talked about earlier that, you know, he was on the low post and he was talking about how he's having more fun this year. He's had a different mindset. And I think, in the past, you know, if you looked at what, you know, I guess like the old guys were saying in the language we were just using, they were like, oh, he's, you know, he celebrates too much, this and that. But he's not even like, he'll celebrate once in a while, but he's like, even when he does, he looks so focused. And I can't really describe it, but like, he always has this look in his eyes, like he's going to the foul line for like the 18th time. And he's just like, keep giving it to me. I'm going to keep scoring. He hasn't, you know, there are guys who will, you know, get hot, and they're, you know, we talked about it with Ben a little bit, where it's like, you know, Ben sometimes is more aggressive than others and it's visible. And with Joel, he very rarely has a quarter where he's not scoring like at least, you know, 6 points if he's in there and getting the ball. So I definitely agree with that. Brad, I have to admit that I have not seen The Chase because I haven't been home. I've been at school and I don't really watch TV at school. But could you tell us about it? You're hosting The Chase. I know it's a trivia show, and I know it's there's more episodes coming soon, I believe. So could you let us know about The Chase? And this summer, I'm definitely planning on watching.
Great. It's on Hulu if you want to check out season one. So,
oh, I have Hulu. Great.
Yeah. So feel free to check us out there. And yeah, we're coming back for season two on Sunday, June 6th, moving from Thursdays to Sundays. So that's exciting. Yeah, so basically The Chase is it's an import of a British format where the concept is we take average Joe trivia players and put them up against the Jeopardy goats. So there's a team of three contestants and they go through a cash builder round where they answer a bunch of rapid fire trivia questions to build up a bank that they'll then play for against either me or Ken or James. And then we have the chance to chase them in the second round of multiple choice questions. And so if they manage to get through that, they get through to the final chase. So either, you know, any number of the three contestants can get through to that. And then the big finale is another rapid fire round where they answer a set of questions, get to a number of questions, and then they ask one of us a different set of questions to see if we can catch them that way. So one of the things that's really cool about it is that we've been talking about Jeopardy and Millionaire. And it's sort of the best of both worlds. You know, Jeopardy, you get 61 questions every night and it comes fast and furious. And then Millionaire, you have the very dramatic single question where, you know, you're waiting to see what happens. And with the individual chase rounds, we have that too. So it's the best of both worlds. And I'm glad people have seemed to like it. And we're back for a new season. It's been a ton of fun. Oh, and another cool thing that they actually don't do on the British version is that the two chasers who aren't playing that night are sitting back in the green room sort of cracking wise about the proceedings that are going on, which was also a lot of fun to do. And I think comes across really well on TV. So
I was gonna ask about that because that was my favorite part, to be like, oh, you guys, like you and James are in the green room, and you're like, of course Ken is gonna get this question. Or like when he gets one wrong, you're like, I can't believe you didn't know that. It was so funny. And I really love that part about it.
Yeah, like, yeah, so I've known Ken for 15 years, so we're friends, and then I've gotten to know James pretty well over the past couple of years, so it's nice. We got a nice little friendly competitiveness going on. We like to, you know, bust each other's chops, so it's a lot of fun, and, you know, I think we came up with some pretty funny stuff back there, which is also nice.
I was just going to ask, you know, you mentioned that you've gotten to know James over the last, I guess, couple of years now. And he's a big sports guy. He was, before Jeopardy he was a sports bettor, I believe. So
yeah, he still is.
You guys talk about that kind of stuff and, you know, about the Philly teams and I guess just in general, is that a big topic when you're back there with those guys?
Yeah, especially with James, like that sports is pretty much mostly what we talk about. And he's a big he's from Chicago originally, so he's a big Bears fan. So like we sort of commiserate about like, yeah. Oh, God, what's going on with our teams?
Yeah, my roommate's a Bears fan and we do that, too. So I can relate to that.
Brad, I'm wondering, have they come to you, the powers that be in the reality space, have they come to you about getting you into one of the other reality shows, like where it's a bunch of people in a house? I'm thinking a Floribama Shore and Are You the One? Like, and how receptive would you be to that sort of proposition?
My cousin's wives actually are trying to get me on The Bachelor, which
come on,
we all love The Bachelor.
Here for that.
Like they're obsessed with it. Like they talk about it all the time. So yeah, I would definitely consider that if that came across. I'm probably way too old, actually, but
never.
Yeah, so we'll do. Yeah, the middle-aged bachelor. It'll be like a new departure for the show. But yeah, I would certainly listen.
You would do so well on. I always think that, you know, on the Bachelor and Bachelorette, so few of them talk like real people and seem like they have even a shred of a sense of humor. So I think that you would be a real breath of fresh air on there.
Well, yeah, I thank you for that, but I suspect that I might be there for the wrong reasons. So I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, that's possible. Do you guys have anything else for Brad before we let you get out of here?
I don't think so.
Brad, thank you so much. It means a lot to us that you were able to spend this time with us. And, you know, the fans of the podcast will be very happy to hear from you. And let us know if there's anything else that you'd like us to get out there for you.
Sure. Yeah. Chase comes back Sunday, June 6th on ABC, 9/8 Central. Check it out. And I'm trying to get more followers on Instagram. So it's Brad Rutter Official. If you care to check it out.
All right, great. Perfect. Thank you so much
we'll
for doing
this,
Brad.
We'll give you three new followers right here. You got Bingo. Three
awesome.
New
yeah. Thanks, guys. It was fun.
Thanks
Thank
so much,
you, Brad.
Have a good one.
You too.
So the only thing left for us here on this podcast is to update the standings in terms of our predictions. And Emily is taking notes about them. I can see it, which is great. We're going to predict the week's game. So Emily, first of all, you can go ahead and update with where we're at right now.
So you guys went 3-0 this week. I went 2-1.
You did your strategy too.
It was the wrong strategy. And now Dan is in the lead 39-21. I'm in second at 38-22. And Steve, you're doing well at 34-26, well over 500. You've really mm-hmm. made a comeback here.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that I've made it known that I'm going back to my old strategy. And Dan has said he's also going to adopt my strategy, in which case he's going to beat me by one. So there's nothing
Dan can just
done.
Dan can just play prevent defense right here and never get caught, you know?
Well, that's the advantage of the lead position. Like when Emily was killing me and she was picking the Sixers to win every game, every week I was like, I have to pick them to lose one or else I'm going to stay the same amount of mess. That's how I lucked into the Pelicans beat the Sixers and I somehow got that right. Cause like, I have to pick one.
Yeah. All right. So on to this week, this will be the second leg of this sort of seven game stretch, which we were talking about before it started. The Sixers play at home against Golden State. And then they play at home against Phoenix. And then that goes into a back-to-back It's Phoenix one night and then at Milwaukee the next night. Again, the NBA just has no rhyme or reason for why two games are back-to-back. I don't understand. And then it's a series in Milwaukee. So it is, they play Thursday in Milwaukee and then they play Saturday in Milwaukee. So Golden State, Phoenix at home, then the back-to-back Milwaukee and then at Milwaukee. Dan, what do you think is going to happen this week with the Sixers?
Well, here's what I'll say. I'm not going to pick them to win every game. Mm-hmm. I think this is a tough stretch. They're playing some really good teams. And I want to follow my head here. So I'm going to say they win Monday at home against Golden State. Mm-hmm. That game's on ESPN. Of course, I've been home from school the last 2 weeks. I'm going back soon. Of course, while I'm home, all the games are nationally televised, which makes when I'm at school, much easier to watch.
Right.
I think so. We win Monday. Wednesday, we play the Suns. That one's NBA TV. We're at home. I think we lose that game. I worry that the Sixers might have someone sitting out. And the Suns have been so consistent. They haven't been losing basically at all, although they kind of got killed by the Spurs last night. But besides mm-hmm. that, they've been playing basically perfect basketball. I'm going to say that the Sixers also lose to the Bucks in the second half of the back-to-back. And then beat the Bucks when they play Saturday. So win, loss, loss, win. I have them 2-2 this week.
Wow.
They lose the second half of the back-to-back or win the second half of the back-to-back?
They lose both halves of the back-to-back and win the other two games.
Okay. I got you.
I think that's just a brutal back-to-back.
It is a brutal back-to-back. So I'm going to say Sixers beat Golden State. Sixers beat Phoenix, which would be a tough game. The Sixers are so good at home. And then one or two guys rest at Milwaukee in that first game, which is the second half of that back-to-back. They lose that Milwaukee game. And then on the last day of this sort of stretch, they beat Milwaukee. So I have a 3-1 week for the Sixers with that one loss being the first Milwaukee game. Emily, there's a tactical part of this where you want to catch Dan. So I doubt you're going to predict exactly what he did. So what are you going
with? I won't. And I could go back to my strategy and get games up on Dan this week, potentially. Mm-hmm. I gotta make moves. Like Brad said, we play to win. I can't just play for second. That's not what we're about here. But I'm going to go with the Sixers are going to beat Golden State. Steph is good, but no one else on that team is. So going to pick that. Phoenix is good. I'm going to go, we win against Phoenix because they're at home and Dan picked Phoenix to win. The back to the Milwaukee games. I'm going to say that they win the first one, lose the second one.
Wow. So we have three games different this week.
Wow.
Yeah. So I have them going 3-1. They win the first three games to like really have a really nice little win streak going. And then they're going to lose the second Milwaukee game.
Okay.
Wow.
I'm looking at it. I don't feel great about it, but that's what I've said.
This is a pivotal week in the standings.
It's a big week.
I sort of feel like I've been forgotten in the standings. I don't think that we're really focusing much on that, but that's okay.
I mean,
flying under the radar.
How far back are you, Steve?
He's only four games back from me, five okay. from you. There's time.
There's plenty of time, yeah.
Come on, don't count me out. We have to thank Brad very much again for coming on and watch The Chase and follow him on Instagram, all of that stuff. Brad was great, and it was very cool to have him on.
There's like a weird overlap between, not weird, but like an interesting overlap between like Sixers Twitter and Jeopardy Twitter. I think there's a lot of like Ooh. Overlap in the Venn diagram of it. So I think people are really going to be excited to hear from Brad.
Yeah, Brad was great. And so, of course, this week we will have another locker room for you. As we do every week. But also then next Sunday, we are going to have a special guest, former Liberty baller, Brandon Lee Gowton, who is the head of Bleeding Green Nation, giant Eagles guy. That'll be our last Gastro Blues before the Eagles draft. So We'll get lots of Sixers and Eagles stuff from Brandon, and very excited to have him on. Anything else, guys, before we get out of here?
Nothing for me. Just an excellent podcast we just did, I have to say.
Excellent. Another perfect podcast. Look at us go.
That's what we do.
Look at us. Great seeing you both. And have a great day. And we'll talk to you later in the week. See ya.
See ya.
Bye.
To-dos, less time, and an infinite number of tools to keep track of. Sometimes doing business has never felt harder, but you don't need a miracle to hit your goals. You can just use HubSpot because their all-in-one customer platform can make growing your business infinitely easier. Imagine this: high-quality leads, fast closing deals, wildly happy customers, and more benchmark-breaking quarters. It's not a miracle, it's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.